Our next speaker is the communications director for one of our big sponsors today, the Seco Student Alliance. Please welcome Jesse Califf.
How's everybody doing today?
Great.
Thanks for coming out. I know we lost an hour last night. I'm still looking for it. I'm trying to sort of compensate with the amount of caffeine I drank. So I swear any jitters are not because I'm nervous. It's all the caffeine. Gonna blame it on that. I'm here to talk about the secular student movement. This is what I've been doing for the last 3 years, working for the Secular Student Alliance. It's a fantastic place to work. And at the moment, it's my job to brag about the students. But let's back up a little bit. Before this, I was with the Secular Coalition for America, a lobbying organization of national non-theistic organizations. Before that, I was with the American Humanist Association. Before that, I was an unpaid intern with the American Humanist Association. Before that, I told I was a small child. I don't believe it. I've never acted young or immature in my life and will certainly not do so during this talk. But I'd like to congratulate the AHA here at UW-Madison for this incredible event, what the students have done. I'm blown away that they could put this on for free. So if we could get a round of applause for the organizers. Events like this remind me why I love what I do. And they're able to put this on for free, partly because of an enormous grant they got from the university. I don't know if you heard, but they got a $69,000 grant, I believe is the amount. This is more than any of our groups have ever gotten. We really hope that this inspires other groups to apply for funding to put on ambitious projects like this, because they've shown it's possible. And I worked with Chris Calvi to get some attention for it. The International Business Times covered the huge grant. It was in, I think, the local Wisconsin paper, in the San Francisco Chronicle, the Seattle Post, Huffington Post, the Washington Post picked it up. The Christian News Network picked it up. They were slightly less enthusiastic. And eventually, your own Badger Herald wrote a news article about how many news articles had been written about this grant. Atheist groups funding draws headlines concerns. And so this is what I get to do. I said at the Secular Student Alliance conference last summer that, yes, I get to be the one up here talking, but I'm bragging about what the students are doing. I'm not out there as an activist anymore. I'm not on the ground. The students are doing things, and I get the privilege and honor to share the stories with you. And since I've been in the movement since college, looking at it from different perspectives, I'd like to take this talk and sort of share why it's so important to me and why I think it should be so important to you. A year ago, the Reason Rally gave some perspective to me. How many of you actually made it to the Reason Rally? Wow, this is a lot more than I thought. Okay. What did you think? I know I got a huge vibe of energy. Is that, seeing a lot of nodding. Yeah. Actually, personally, I felt terrified because I was running around trying to act as the publicity director, and I was also supposed to give a 5-minute speech right after Jessica Ahlquist, who was a tough act to follow, but at least illustrates the thrust of my talk, that students can be so incredible. But the headline that CNN put on the story is my favorite. Atheist rally continues in spite of rain, students highlighted throughout. And I knew that was the turning point in my eyes for when the rest of the movement realized that students are so essential to the movement. We are more numerous than ever before, and we're a growing part of changing the country. The Reason Rally itself was, I think, 20,000, numbers vary, but 20,000 of us gathered in DC to show Washington, to show the nation, and to show each other that we're not alone, that we are growing in numbers, growing in power, and growing impatient with the way we're being treated and the way that our country is going. As we're trying to figure out what to do with all of this growing power, we need to look at our goals and how to achieve them. So Jessica, who I followed, her story really highlights the need for this kind of movement. As I think most of you probably know, but she was a 16-year-old high school student in Cranston, Rhode Island, and saw a prayer banner on the wall in clear violation of the separation of church and state, the Constitution, and she stepped up. She challenged it. She asked for it to be removed. Good for her. What happened next? She was vilified, bullied. She was given death threats, and Representative Palumbo, Democrat, state representative, went on the air and called her an evil little thing. for standing up for the Constitution and for standing up for minority rights. If it had just been that, that would have been enough to make me angry. But it's not just state elected representatives. This is Newt Gingrich in the debate for the presidential nominee, saying, "How can you have judgment if you have no faith? How can I trust you with power if you don't pray?" He was the front runner for a while for the nominee and was the former Speaker of the House. That would have been enough to make me angry. It's not just former representatives and politicians, it's current representatives as well, Representative Paul Brown, saying all the stuff I was taught about evolution and embryology and the Big Bang Theory, all that is lies, straight from the pit of hell. For the record, he's on the House Science Committee. That would have been enough to make me angry. And it's not just the House, we have the senators. Jim Inhofe saying, "My point is God's still up there. The arrogance of people to think that we human beings would be able to change what he, God, is doing to the climate is to me outrageous." And I'm so glad Eugenie Scott talked about this, that at the moment the political pressure on climate change denial is out there. We need better science education, and it's at the highest levels. And for the record, Inhofe is the ranking member of the Committee on Environment and Public Works. Sensing a pattern? Are you angry enough, though? This is Greta's book, Why Are You Atheists So Angry? You know, we have religious bullying in our schools. We have Louisiana, among others, trying to push creationism bills in the classroom. The Texas GOP, in their platform, opposed critical thinking by name. They oppose critical thinking because it, quote, challenges the students' fixed beliefs and undermines parental authority. Isn't that what we're here for? Isn't that what the schools are supposed to do? Give them the new beliefs, teach them good science, not creationism, not what their parents happen to think. We need to teach them good science. And to me, this is just an overwhelming sense of, admittedly, rage. But it's spread out over years, so I'm dealing with it as best I can. And anger is good. It inspires us to act. We see something wrong, we need to figure out what to do. And some people are stepping up. They're doing something about it. When Jessica Ahlquist saw the prayer banner, she stepped up. She challenged it. When she was bullied, the secular community stepped up and gave her a new place to feel at home and safe and welcomed, and even gave her a scholarship that Hemant and Friendly Atheist raised online for $60,000 to go to college. Yeah. When Louisiana started teaching creationism and pushing these bills, student Zach Coplin, in high school at the time, stepped up and became the poster boy for science education. And he's just so articulate, so enthusiastic, so bright. He's now continuing the fight at Rice. He graduated high school, he's at Rice, and has been on the news everywhere. He's just on with legend Bill Moyers, and if you can find it, I believe it's still online for free for a little while. It's a fantastic segment, also featuring Susan Jacoby. And when Texas, I speak about Texas a bunch, started teaching and changing their curriculum to minimize Thomas Jefferson and the secular nature of our government, Matt LeClaire, one of our students, he served on the board of directors for the Secular Student Alliance for a while, stepped up and actually just called the chair of the curriculum board, Don McElroy, and said, "Look, I have some concerns. Can we talk about these changes?" Turns out almost nobody had called him before. There had been major outlets writing about this case, writing about Don McElroy, but nobody had really made substantive suggestions. And so when Matt took him on the radio show that he runs and said, "Look, here's a suggestion. Here's why it's a problem to require students to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance and have them recite it. I was bullied." And Don McElroy said, "I had never heard things like that. This is really helping open my eyes." He brought back some of Matt's suggested changes to the school board. These are the things when people step up and challenge the problems that we're facing. But are we looking at intervention or prevention? Intervention is really important. When somebody has a health problem, like a heart attack, you need to be able to step in and give them the care so that they can get better. But if we're facing an epidemic of heart disease, being able to step in when there's a problem is not enough. A little bit of investment in prevention can go a long way towards stemming the costs of intervention later. And looking at the systematic way that religion is privileged in society, that secular students are bullied in society, and the way we are so vilified and trusted less than rapists, I don't think it's enough to just settle for intervening. We need leverage for a society-wide change. We can't rush from crisis to crisis. We need to figure out, we're not large enough yet to just impose our will on the government and on society. So with the limited power we have, growing but limited, where do we put this? What gives us the best potential for change? And I argue that the secular students are the way. I'll give some fantastic examples through the talk, but there is hope. The good news is that the demographics are in our favor. There are some recent Pew studies finding that the rise of the nones, for the people checking the none of the above box about their religious identity, is rising. And this is just in the past 5 years. The number of unaffiliated Americans, unaffiliated with religion, has gone up to 19.6%. Half of that is atheists and agnostics. This is not just people who, you know, don't care either way. These are, we are finally at 5.7. That's more than Jews, Hindus, Muslims. I mean, we are a substantial population. So this seems promising. Seems like there is hope and that we can make a difference, but we actually can focus in more. And we're looking at something interesting. This was not the most recent poll. Pew did something earlier asking whether people ever doubt the existence of God. And what do you see here? There's not a lot of change by generation. Most of them, the silence boomers and Gen Xers, around 80, high 80s to the 90s% of saying that they never doubt the existence of God. But the millennials, there's something going on with the millennials where there's a sharp drop in their belief in God. The rate of doubt has doubled in the past 5 years to 31% saying that they sometimes doubt the existence of God. By age, we're seeing that there's a huge difference in the millennials as well. The senior citizens, 65 and up, only 9% are unaffiliated with religion, 90% claim a religious identity. Among the youngest generation, 32% are unaffiliated with religion. This gives us leverage. We can figure out who to focus on, who gives us the most promise. And it's not just that people start out non-religious and they slowly become religious over time. If you follow the same group throughout their lives, what do we see? Well, we see the greatest generation not changing much in the last 30, 40 years. Silent generation, the boomers, Gen X, each of these are higher than the past, but they're still not changing all that much over time. And of course, the millennials. This is from 2000, by the way, so the numbers are even better now. As I said, 32% with the millennials are unaffiliated with religion. But what we're seeing is that the beliefs people form in their late teens, their early 20s, tends to stick with them through life. We need to take advantage of this. We need to give people an opportunity to explore their views. And there's some other people who know this fact as well. Campus Crusade for Christ, currently known as CRU, has been taking this approach for decades. They say that their fundamental strategy is win the campus today, change the world tomorrow. They have a head start on us. It's true. The good news is we're catching up. We can catch up to them and offer it. In a brief detour, last year, my coworker Liz gave a talk and compared our numbers to CRU. I won't walk you through it, but it was a comparison of how much we'd grown compared to how much they'd grown. We've had some trouble verifying their numbers. Their website has not updated how many groups they have since then. I called, I sent an email, I haven't heard back yet. So if we take them at face value, they haven't grown at all in the past year. Honestly, I don't think that's a fair guess, but we are trying to figure out how much we're growing compared to them. Given that we are a smaller population and that they have a head start, I'm still incredibly inspired at the rate of growth that we're showing compared to them. But with these groups, it's not just about imposing our will, teaching them what to think, it's about teaching them how to think and giving them the idea that it's an opportunity to explore. And that brings me to Brianne's story, who many of you heard at the Reason Rally, but haven't mentioned a New York Times article that was covering one of our high school groups in Panama City, Florida. And the journalist talked with Brianne, who was 17 at the time. She said she didn't know what she believed. She called herself an agnostic, but she joined the Christian Club and the Secular Student Alliance at her school. Some students actually accused her of doing it as a joke. Some thought she was a spy. What would we spy on? But she just said that she was confused, saying that she wanted to get both points of view. And that's a really admirable approach to explore the issue for yourself. We're not in the business of telling people what to think. And how did it turn out? If you know the end of the story, she started in the fall. A few months later, around Christmas, ironically, she stopped going to the Christian club and stuck with the Secular Student Alliance, saying, and I love this, "I guess I found out who I was." When we give these students the opportunity and let them realize that there's an alternative, that it's a viable worldview to be secular American, that they can promote science and reason and acceptance, it doesn't have to be dogma. In these crucial years, we need to be there. We need to give them that choice. And we can either take the opportunity or watch it go by. And we're taking advantage of the opportunity. This is my favorite chart, the Secular Student Alliance growth chart. Skyrocketing with what I call terrifying growth. Trying to keep up with all the students flocking to us, looking to start secular student groups. The red is high school. This is at the end of 2012, where we had 394 groups, I believe. Obviously, it's been a few months since then, and we now have 423 groups. It's scary. So, around the country, we have these 423 groups. What are they doing? What's the point? Is it just to give people a place to feel safe? Well, no, they're actually doing good work in their community. The one point, if people walk away with anything, is I keep hearing students are the future. Students are the future. Well, yes, but I think it's better phrased as the future is students. The future will be shaped by students, but students are more than the future. Students are also the present. They're doing things right now. Look around the room, see what's going on at this conference, at campuses all over the place. They're changing the world now. They're not waiting for the future. And if that's the one thought you walk away with, I'll be happy. But this is the sort of thing that they do. This is the East Carolina group doing one of the club fairs, setting up, normalizing non-belief, providing community, walking around showing their classmates and peers that we're just like everybody else. We're your friends, we're your coworkers, we're sitting next to you in class, and we're not scary. We're good people, we work hard, and you would really like us if you get to know us. The common idea is that, well, I don't know any atheists. Yes, you do. You just didn't realize it yet. And secular student groups are dispelling that idea by being out and open about, well, yeah, I'm an atheist. Do you want to come to the club? Hear more about it? And it's not just college. It's high schools as well. This is Santa Ynez Valley Union High School in California. And our high school efforts started in earnest about 2 years ago, at the beginning of 2011, when the Stiefel Freethought Foundation gave us a grant to focus on helping these high school students. And we had a full-time staff member. At the time, it was J.T. Eberhard for a while. Now it's Andy Cheadle. And we helped them overcome a lot of the bullying and obstinate administrators who decide that students don't really fit in if they're not religious, and we don't want to have that in our schools, which is illegal, by the way. Help them get started in the face of opposition, often from their parents. Sometimes we have to send packages to other locations rather than the students' homes. And one of the most important reasons is that not everybody goes to college. If people are going to experience a conversation with a secular student, it can't just be college. We need to engage at the high school level as well when students are discussing the ideas and really exploring it. And in law school, I think this one's going to get the religious right a little bit upset. This is Ashley Carter and the Secular Legal Society at Moritz College. But if there's Christian legal societies to help them explore how to argue for their faith through the law, it's about damn time we had secular legal societies for secular students to form community networking, bring in notable speakers, and discuss separation of church and state. We're really excited about this. You're hearing it now. This might be the next big push in the media that I'm looking at. So don't go running with this, but if you see something about it soon, don't be too surprised. I'm really excited about it. But besides just offering community and providing support, what do? Well, we promote acceptance on campus. This is the UCLA group, the Secular Student Alliance, counter-protesting the Westboro Baptist Church. Signs like God loves inception, God hates hate. We promote education. This is the Freethought Festival last year. The idea of educating people and educating ourselves about a secular worldview, about science, about how to live with each other. This is a huge part of being a secular student. Promote discussion. I love this flyer from Clemson, making a play on the Roche Arc test, but do atheists and Christians see different things in life? Come discuss it. It's a panel discussion with both the secular student group and one of the Christian groups on campus. This is really common to work with religious groups to help educate each other about our worldviews. We serve others. Community service is a huge part of religious organizations, and it's a big part of being a secular student as well. This is the Presbyterian College, and yes, we have secular student groups on religious campuses. Presbyterian College raised over $3,200 for the Light the Night towards fighting blood cancer with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. How much do you think this changes people's minds when they think about atheists as having no morals, about us being entirely focused on ourselves? The work that our students do with Foundation Beyond Belief, with the Volunteers Beyond Belief, and just the work they do in the community really makes a difference and makes the world a better place. And we dissolve the stigma. This is also for the Light the Night challenge, but hug an atheist, $1. How much more open and inviting could that be? This was actually so successful, the mayor of the town, this is from the Illini Secular Student Alliance, the mayor of the town stopped by, donated, and later agreed to come speak to the group at their Light the Night walk. Gave a talk about acceptance and saying, look, it doesn't matter as much what you believe as what you do for the community, and the Secular Student Alliance is doing great things. We're making progress. This is the sort of thing that student groups are doing right now, and why they are the present as well as the future. And what might be the most important to me is that we have fun in these groups. The famous or possibly infamous, I think the young kid joined for a very excited minute or two while his parents took a picture. But the famous or infamous organizer, Saul Alinsky, said, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. If your people aren't having a ball doing it, there's something wrong with the tactic. Being an activist shouldn't be work. Doing this kind of activity shouldn't drag on. It shouldn't be a burden. We need to have fun being an activist. Otherwise, you won't keep doing it. And this is what makes students the best activists you will ever find. They are passionate. They are creative. And they are entirely fearless. They're not daunted by the challenges ahead. There's another quote I've used before, and I just love it so much, by Pearl S. Buck, that the young don't know enough to be prudent, and so they attempt the impossible and achieve it generation after generation. If anybody is going to change the world in the face of all of this systemized bias against us, students having fun and going out there undaunted by the challenge is what's going to do it. But that's the students on the ground. The National SSA, I really feel, multiplies this power. We learn from one another, we inspire one another, and we are connected. It's not enough to let one group out there do its thing. They're great, they are fantastic activists, but we can do so much more, and we do so much more. Because when one group has an idea, it sets off a chain reaction. A great idea in one part of the country can snowball, and when more groups pick it up, the snowball turns into an avalanche. And I want to share some of these examples because I think that's really one of the overlooked benefits of doing grassroots work. How many of you have heard of Ask an Atheist Day? Excellent. How many of you know how it started at the national level? I see students from the Illini Secular Student Alliance and a couple other group leaders. It started on campus. A student named Karthik had the idea of coordinating it. Students have already done the Ask an Atheist idea. It's one of the simplest things. You have a table, you have a sign. It says, Ask an Atheist. You sit there smiling and wait for people to ask you questions. But Karthik had the vision of making it a national effort, bringing everybody together in a sort of day of solidarity, doing it together and feeling like something larger. And so I think they designed stickers that we provided to our groups, and it spread. We had groups, I think 75 groups in the first year on the same day did Ask an Atheist events. It was bigger the next year. This year, on April 18th, we're going to be doing it again, passing out What is an Atheist brochures, giving stickers, and helping the groups run successful tabling. One person on one campus had an idea to all coordinate, and it's been spreading across the country. Stony Heathen, I love this one too. Students take a hot day, usually in the South, hold up signs with quotes from the Bible about how heathens should be stoned, possibly adulterers as well, and then invite passersby to buy the right to throw a water balloon at them. This is the University of Georgia doing it. They raised money at the very beginning of the semester. They showed everybody how much fun that you can have. They got a lot of new members. They got publicity for their group. The student paper covered it. I think there was even a video clip on the news. But they didn't come up with the idea themselves. The University of South Carolina had done it earlier, raising money for Amnesty International and trying to raise awareness of the stonings that happened in the Middle East. One good idea carried out elsewhere. And the last one that I particularly want to share, Brother Jed Bingo. Perhaps you've heard of Brother Jed. He is an open-air preacher that goes from campus to campus. He's been doing it for a long time, spreading hatred and hellfire and bigotry and brimstone, and generally promoting the idea that if you're not exactly the kind of Christian he wants you to be, you're evil, sinful, and shouldn't be around. And we need to combat this. Students walking past on the quad, hearing that they're going to hell, or that they're sinful, or that there's something wrong with them, need to have a voice out there to let them feel more welcomed. And so the secular students want to counter this impulse, the voice. And people have tried different things. I love Brother Jed Bingo. The idea is you have a huge board and you hand out bingo cards with the various idiotic or hateful things that Brother Jed tends to say. As he goes, there is now a rapt audience checking things off. And occasionally raising their hand and saying, bingo, and getting a prize from the group. It's fun. It shows people that we can laugh at this kind of hatred. And Brother Jed is seeing it more and more. I asked the Alliance Secular Student Alliance, some of the leaders here this weekend, where they got the idea. They said they got it from Cash in Minnesota. They were talking at one of the Secular Student Alliance leadership conferences over lunch, heard the idea, turned to each other and said, we should do that. They did. I asked Cash where they got the idea. They don't know. They heard it from somebody else. Good ideas can spread, and that's how we do it. We pick the best ideas. There are groups across the country brainstorming, coming up with new things, and we can just pick the best. It's crowdsourcing at its best. Which brings me to the leadership conference, which was the place some of this got started. This is 2009, 2010, 2011, slightly larger, and our most recent conference, 2012, overflowing the stairs, trying to fit everybody in. This year, we actually are splitting it up, trying to accommodate the West Coast better. It's always been in Columbus. Well, it's been in Columbus for all of these years. This year, we're doing in Columbus and a separate location in Vegas, trying to get the West Coast. But the leadership conference brings all these students together. This one is 300 activists in one place. And watching the sparks fly as they talk to each other and formed friendships, exchanged ideas, listened to the talks, gave talks. Our conference is heavily focused on leadership training. The students give talks about what has worked, what doesn't work, what they found really important. We bring in notable speakers to present on particularly group running as much as possible. For example, Ted Cox gives a talk on what you can do to make the speaker happy. From his point of view, he's been a speaker and wants to let all the students know what has worked and what didn't work from his point of view. And they're really making a difference. You can see as they come back the next year, more energized with more ideas and more friends that they know they can go to for help. It's one of the best experiences, and if you can make it in the summer, they're in June and July in the Vegas and Columbus. Come talk with me afterwards for any more details about this, but it's just a really eye-opening experience for anybody who's interested in the movement. But Then the students graduate, hopefully, and move on. What happens with all this knowledge and this creativity? Partly they go out into the world and continue changing the world, but the secular student movement doesn't want to lose this information. And so that's why we have the group running guide. We amplify their power, giving them more leverage, because we need an institutional memory. As students come up with ideas and we see what works, what doesn't, we have a spiral bound, it's about 85 pages with just the best practices. What works, what doesn't? Here, it's the Bible of group running for you. Take it, be merry. You know, writing everything from writing a constitution to planning events, attracting members, flipping through it. I didn't have one when I was at Carolina. I tried running a group. We met every couple weeks at a bar and looked at it and said, what do you want to talk about? I graduated, the group died. About a year afterwards, some students started a group again. They affiliated with the Secular Student Alliance, got a group running guide, and it took off. So, one, way to make me look bad. Two, it made me realize how important something like this is. I didn't know what to do, but the Secular Student Alliance does. They've been doing this for 13 years, helping students run groups, and they've figured out the best ways. We're always improving, we're looking for new ideas, but we have a repository of all of what we've learned so far, and we give it out to the groups. And that's it, this is how we change the world. We've been looking at our limited power and figuring out the best place to get leverage. These are our groups, college and high school across the country. I don't know if I mentioned the blue ones, we have 68 high school affiliates right now. We organized, I believe, 130 speakers bureau events across the country. We sent out 350 boxes of tabling supplies for students to hand out, pens, brochures, stickers, business cards. Surprisingly helpful. We provided free of charge over 20,000 What is an Atheist brochures to help them educate their communities about what it means not to believe in a God. It's a big problem. It's a big challenge. But if we're looking at the best place to do it, there's no question that campus is the place, and that students are far more powerful than they realize. I think they sometimes feel isolated on campus without knowing anybody else. But then they join a group, a Secular Student Alliance group, and they feel more powerful because they have friends, they can make a difference. And then those groups join the national Secular Student Alliance movement, and they feel even more connected, more powerful, that they can have more of an impact. And then those groups join the national organizations in the Secular Coalition and other larger movements like the Reason Rally, where students drove for 26 hours to get there. We're changing the world. My boss, August, has a saying that if you want a voice in the newsrooms, the courtrooms, and the boardrooms tomorrow, you need a voice in the classrooms today. How else are you going to do it? These students carry their views the rest of their lives, and they're skilled leaders on campus, and then when they go off campus, they can lead off-campus groups. One of our group leaders, Dave Moscato, just got hired by American Atheists to do their publicity and PR. We're training the future leaders of the movement, in addition to giving them the ability to change things now. I've been talking about leverage. I can't help but mention and think about Archimedes, who said, give me a big enough lever and a place to stand and I can move the world. We've got a pretty big lever right here. So what do you say? Want to move the world with us? If you're a student, join up. The group here is doing fantastic things. If you're a student and you're not part of AHA, join. If you're a student somewhere else, join the National Secular Student Alliance as a free student member or start a group on your campus. If you're not a student, I hope this shows you why it's so important. If you want to see the world change the way I do, this seems like the perfect place to enable the activists. And we have a $250,000 matching offer going on right now. Any contributions are doubled. I often hear, well, I'm not a student. Great, you have income. We need all of your help because we don't ask for anything from the students. Everything is from us to them. We don't require payment. We exist to serve them. If you love the things we're doing, we need your help as well. So thank you all for being a part of this event. Thank you all for listening and for taking part in making the world a better place with me. Thank you. I'll bring it back to the title. And I can do questions for a while, 10 minutes.
It 10 looks minutes. Like.
And then at lunch, I can talk. I talk for a living and do it quite a lot.
All right.
One of your early slides, you showed the Badger headline,
mm-hmm.
and it said that there were parental complaints. I'm wondering how those were dealt with, if they were dealt with at all.
I don't know how those specific parental complaints were dealt with, but I can share some other stories about how they tend to work out. I'm thinking in particular of Larkin High School in Michigan, I believe it is, where the students held an Ask an Atheist Day in their cafeteria with other groups. Student groups often have tables. And one parent was so upset by this fact that she took her kids out of class and wrote to the school papers, to the local papers about how she didn't want her kids hearing about atheism and how dare the school. The principal did a fantastic job at Larkin High School saying, look, I'm giving them the same rights everybody else has. No student was forced to have a conversation about this. Discussion is important, and I'm going to keep supporting their right to do this. I think at a university level, it's even more likely to be supportive. We've had far more problems at the local levels at high schools where administrators aren't quite as accommodating. And after one or two friendly letters and then one or two angry letters and then some phone calls and some threats, often with the help of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we convinced them that the law is pretty clear on this. So when there are parental concerns, the administrators get worried, but more and more they're standing up for our rights. And so it's a very promising trend.
One of the pictures you had up before showed the differences in funding. And SSA had approximately $1 million, and you said that came from you. Okay, your own money. Group, $500 million.
Something like that.
Money coming from?
That's a good question. I think it's mostly donors. So our money is entirely from donors and contributions from like foundations, like the Stiefel Freethought Foundation I mentioned. We don't accept any government money. We don't charge the students anything. It's entirely the rest of the secular community trying to support the activism that we're promoting for the students. Campus Crusade, as we said, is about 500 times larger in terms of budget. And they've been around longer and they have far more staff. We have 12, 13 staff, something like that, for our 423 groups. They have 1,700 groups, and they have a ratio of about 3 staff to every group. That's what you can do with $500 million. We're growing, but not that fast, and we are taking from a different pool. You know, Christians who want to support the Campus Crusade mission are so numerous that they can draw on all of those people. We have fewer supporters, fewer non-religious Americans, secular Americans, who are trying to support the activism, but I don't think it should be a 500-to-1 ratio. I think it should be much, much closer. And if I had my druthers, it would be, we would get more funding and have a larger mission. But I think that's really where we need to make the change, slowly changing people's views so that they understand and support the cause. Slowly that will shift the funding balance. And I think that's, maybe I'm young and idealistic. Actually, I'm definitely young and idealistic, but that's a feature, not a bug in my line of work. But I think it can happen. I think we'll even that, and it's happening. Our budget, I think 3 years ago was $250,000. We've quadrupled in just a couple of years, 2-3 years. So come back in a year and let's see where we are.
Do you think there's value in having student groups work with local groups, and if so, what suggestions do you have on making that happen, and how to do it and how not to do it?
Yeah, the question of how to interact with student groups and off-campus groups has been one we've been looking at for years. And there are some particular challenges in having the students come to off-campus events. Transportation is an issue. The focus can be an issue. The students often feel a little bit isolated if they're coming in ones or twos. Going into a room with a lot of non-students, either they can feel left out, or they feel mobbed and just everybody saying, oh, a student, thank goodness, here, let me hug you. So trying to get them to work together, what we've been saying is more and more try to get the off-campus groups to come to campus, support these projects, work with them. I mean, Free Thought Festival is obviously a huge success and involves some of the local skeptic groups to attract members. There are even things that not, you know, off-campus groups can do to support the student activists, like buying them pizza and saying, hey, we're here if you want to come to our events, but in the, you know, in the meantime, here's some pizza for your event. Do you mind if we sit in? More and more we're seeing off-campus groups being having their members come from campus as the students graduate. And so those connections, I think, since we're turning out so many more students, will help bridge the gap. So I'm very hopeful in the next few years that the interactions will be stronger just because there's a better shared understanding of what activism is.
All right, we have time for more questions.
Depends how long I talk.
Of the universities that you have groups in, are you utilizing community colleges also?
Absolutely. Two-year, four-year community, university, college, law school. I think we even have a couple medical schools going on. We have groups in high school. I think there was one in junior high school. The distinction between junior high and middle school is one that I didn't understand because I grew up with just the middle school model. But commuter schools as well. As I said, religious campuses. Anywhere there are secular students who want to form a group promoting these values, we want to be there to support them. Was that short enough for another?
Yeah, sure.
Hi, would you mind speaking to what are some of the good ways to make inroads with high schools just to increase visibility? I know in high school I never saw any of these groups really heard of it, so what are good ways, you know, if you don't have a younger sibling or kids, to really increase visibility if you want to start groups like this in high school?
It's a good question. I think that trying to go into a school and start a group on your own without already having students on the ground who are interested has not been very successful in the past. We used to go to campuses and flyer without knowing any students there yet, just hoping that somebody would be interested enough seeing the flyers to contact us and start a group. That was early on when we were getting rolling. Now they're coming to us faster than we can keep up with, so we don't do that. But it's just much more successful. If you know somebody on the campus who's thinking about starting a group, definitely letting them know about the Secular Student Alliance, connect them with us, and help them out. Having a older mentor or somebody with who can provide institutional knowledge can be really crucial. This is true at the college level as well as high school, but having somebody outside to check in from time to time, how are things going? You know, are you having any issues that you'd like to talk through? And being supportive, I think. So if you do know somebody there who's interested in starting a group or feels alone, being there for them and supportive is the biggest thing. If you don't, then perhaps being visible in the local community, in the papers, online. More and more people are young people are online. I think that's one of the huge reasons for the explosion of growth we're seeing as people are coming of age in the internet age. If you can be active on there and they hear more about atheism, and you have a web presence where they can search like atheists in my city or in my town and can find a local group that you're a part of, that could be a big help too. So.
All right, I think we're gonna, before we break for lunch, I will give another hand for Jesse Galef.